What makes a great church communicator? Whether you're a volunteer or staff member looking to grow and develop, or you're a pastor looking to recruit volunteers or hire someone, how we understand the role will shape the people, processes, and production we get out of this vital ministry. On today's episode of the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast, Dr. Len Wilson returns to share what he sees as the six traits of a great church communicator. And as a bonus, he gives his biggest piece of advice on where to place our focus and how to shift our thinking as we move from the end of the pandemic and into a new normal. Thank you to everybody for listening. My name is Dan Wunderlich. I'm a United Methodist pastor, and today's episode is actually part two of a conversation we began last time with Dr. Len Wilson. Len is the Director of Innovation and Strategy at St. Andrew UMC in Plano, Texas, as well as the Executive Director of Invite Resources, a new resource publisher that was born out of his local United Methodist Church. He's also a longtime blogger in the church communication space at his site, lenwilson.us. Now, since this is part two of the conversation, I hope you've already had a chance to check out part one. And if not, you may want to go back and listen to that. But without any further ado, let's jump back into my conversation with Dr. Len Wilson. Well, we've mentioned that you have a blog a few times already, and I didn't want to pass up the opportunity to actually walk quickly through one of your posts from July of 2019, Six Traits of a Great Church Creative and Communications Director. Our audience are people who are filling this role, whether they are local pastors who are sort of have to do this role because there's no one else to do it, or some folks may be volunteers who want to get better or would love to turn this into a paid position someday. And some of us are in a paid staff role, and we certainly all have growth areas. And so I want to walk quickly through these six parts, and I'll pair them up because they seem to pair pretty well. The first two traits are the ability to see your job as being a ministry partner, and then secondly, being a brand ambassador who can see the bigger picture of how the church functions and presents itself. We kind of actually talked about that a bit in our last conversation. But these are in contrast with just being a production house. Some of us can just feel like we make the graphics, we write the copy, we shoot the video, we edit the video, we schedule the social media posts, and it can end up feeling like you're a production house rather than a ministry. Why is that mindset shift so essential?
A lot of churches that I've dealt with over the years and consulted and worked at, Dan, have had that kind of production house mentality where they've looked for specialists to execute a vision that comes from somewhere else in the church, either through the senior pastor or through ministry leads. And I know many, many people who operate with that kind of mindset. I also know those same people are frequently very frustrated because they feel like they have expertise in their fields and communication, especially in visual communication, that they're not allowed to bring to bear on the problem because they're given very tight lanes, you know, to say execute. And it's funny how the tighter the image is, the more difficult it is to execute. I've seen this happen plenty of times. Right. The pastor will say, I've got a specific vision in my head. And the more specific that vision it is, the more frustrated everybody gets, you know, with the process of executing. So instead of doing it that way, then if you just abandon that approach altogether and begin to think about communication from an entirely different perspective, and the best model, I don't think there's a single model out there that really captures this perfectly, but the best model might be a brand agency where an agency is tasked with helping to communicate the bottom line of what the company wants, but they're given a lot of freedom to come up with their own campaigns and their own visual concepts in order to accomplish that shared goal. So when you think about a communications person as a partner, and that means you have to rise above the tactics of a specific campaign or need, and you have to talk about larger strategic goals together. And when you bring up someone along, then you're able to talk in broader space and allow that person to do what they do best. When I was in seminary, I had the honor and opportunity to be an intern at CBS Television City in Hollywood. And I sat with the VP there on several occasions, and he said that as a leader, he learned that if he just tells people what he expects of them and gets the heck out of the way, that the results are a heck of a lot better than if he tries to get in there and dictate what it should look like. Now, there's what one colleague of mine calls the leadership gap of death that often emerges, and most pastors are scared to do it because they see that gap. So what that means is you can do something 100% well if you do it yourself. But if you ask a communications person to step to the table and take on ownership, it might drop to 70 or 80% for a while. But ultimately, if you empower that person to do their job well, then the results will be much greater than 100%, and the rising tide lifts everybody as a result. And so I often encourage pastors and communication professionals to think about the communication professional as an executive, as someone who's sitting at the lead table, whatever that lead table is, and their job is messaging. And it happens at a global level for the entire church, and it happens at an individual level where they partner with various ministries to help accomplish whatever it is that they want to do together to name and do.
Yeah, I'll admit there are, myself included, there are many pastors who are frustrated former or aspiring graphic designers or filmmakers. Yes, right. But anyway, that all leads well into traits 3 and 4, which are being a storyteller and makers of metaphors. Part of what makes a resource appealing is that it's usually, you know, a book or a curriculum or a Bible study that grabs people's imagination and makes them want to be a part of it. Yes. Is the guiding metaphor inside of it. And again, this may be an area where we those of us who are pastors might feel like, no, we're the metaphor makers. You just have to figure out how to communicate it better than I could. But how could, and again, you've touched on it some, but being a storyteller and especially a maker of metaphors, how can this really sort of help lift all ministries of the church, as you said?
I wish I had several pastors that I've worked with over the years here with us on this call today, because they could really speak to this better than I could in terms of what I've heard from them when they have learned to collaborate together to work on images, as opposed to, it doesn't mean that, like in the roles that I've had over the years, Dan, at various churches, I don't see myself as the exclusive metaphor maker or storyteller of the church. I see it as a shared collaboration that happens where there's a lot of ideation that goes on. There's a lot of great ideas that go on and a lot of movement of the Holy Spirit that's happening. And we end up having a lot of consensus and we collectively say, oh, this is a great idea. We've got to go for it. And so to empower the communication professional to think in terms of story and metaphor is not to disempower anyone else in that process. It's to take someone who's got skills in that area and has spent their career and is working in their career towards the idea of visualizing concepts and leveraging their skills and talents in unique ways.
And then the final pair is being able to coach well and also developing sustainable strategies. And we've talked about this before. A lot of folks in this job, in this area of ministry, are probably, you know, coming up on burnout if we haven't been already. Hopefully we've found a more sustainable rhythm. But even after we come out of the pandemic, we've added a whole new avenue of worship. And we're just about to talk about it. And you mentioned how ministry has shifted away from the big gatherings that we're used to, which means that we're going to need to continue to learn and grow and grow in excellence in new areas. Why is the ability to coach and develop sustainable strategies not good just for the church, but just for our own personal, you know, mental and emotional and spiritual wellness and longevity in this role?
Oh my gosh, I could give you a whole sad sob story about my own history, Dan, of having kind of a weird calling and it not fitting into traditional lanes or slots. Yeah. And so for a long time, I felt like I had to kind of know how to do everything. And so I would try to acquire every skill I could. I would try to fake it till I make it, you know, and just try to do all these things. And it wasn't until this last beginning about 10 years ago, I began to drop things that I discovered I wasn't the best at, to get honest with myself and just say, okay, maybe I'm average at that, but I'm never going to be great. And I don't have time to try to be great. I don't have the gifts and skills to be great at everything. So why don't we step back and let me figure out what it is that God's uniquely equipped me to do? And for me, that tool was StrengthsFinders. The StrengthsFinders personality assessment was huge for me and kind of life-changing, frankly, because I went through and decided, okay, I'm good at this and this. So I need to stop trying to be good at all these other things. And the more I kind of owned that and began to tell people I'm not good at that other stuff. And, you know, if you want that from me, I'll try to execute it and it might be okay. But if you work with the team, then everybody's better. So that coaching thing is counterintuitive to church communicators because we are often given impossible job descriptions. I got an offer for a job description. Someone sent me a job description for a church a couple weeks ago, which I'm not going to pursue. But I just laughed when I saw it, Dan, because I thought this is so typical of what I have seen coming out of churches of all sizes. You can talk about a church of 200 or a church of 10,000, and it's incredible the amount of work that is put onto a church communication professional.
Yeah.
And one of the strategies I've suggested to people that wear our hat is to always have your next job description lined up. I'll tell people, like, gosh, if I had a graphic designer, I could do so much. And I'll actually have a job description written up. And if I, if we hired this person, then this is what they could do. And it's a 3 to 5 year personnel strategy in my head. Like, if I could hire somebody next year, and gosh, if we grew, then I'd hire somebody else in a couple years. And I have that whole sequence lined out in my head strategically so that I'm ready to move. And I'll talk about it. Every time I see an opportunity to point out that, well, we can't do this because we don't have the staffing. And that doesn't mean full-time necessarily. It could be part-time. It could be volunteer. However you staff, you have to get creative in how you accomplish that. But to always be thinking forward about growing your team, and then have specific ways in which you would use that growth moving forward is one way to keep yourself from having to do everything yourself and inevitably, as you've talked about, burning out.
Mm. All right. Well, we're going to close, circling back to the pandemic and what maybe lies beyond the pandemic. I think someone whose job titles have included Director of Innovation and Strategy and someone who implemented the first screens in a United Methodist church that we know of is probably a good person to ask. If anyone's going to have insight, it's you. But let's also sort of narrow the field down. If there's one thing you think that we as church communicators should either be thinking about or a seed that we need to plant with our senior leaders so that they are ready for whatever may be coming, what maybe are one or two things we should really be thinking about that you think we're maybe not thinking about?
If the era of big event worship is done, and that's clearly a big assumption, probably worth additional conversation, but let's just go with that. Let's say it is. Let's say that we're going to have a hard, and I don't mean worship is done, to be clear about that.
Right.
Not by
any
stretch. I'm talking about the idea that was popularized in the last 25, 30 years of worship as evangelism, worship as the first base, to use the Rick Warren thing, where it's the first initial way in which people engage with the life of the church.
Yeah.
That has shifted from the big event Sunday morning experience to online. And I don't think we're going to go back. We'll go back to live worship. We'll go back to having live worship with rock bands and everything else too. But what we're not going to do is go back to that same mentality of putting so many resources into that kind of first base way of thinking about church. So with that assumption, we'll just kind of say that's true for the sake of talking about it here. Then online has become that. So what is our online presence? One, and then number two, what do you do with live Sunday morning experience? Think about think about the need for Christian community. The actual physical presence of one another as fellow believers in koinonia may be the biggest demand or need of our churches over the next 10 to 20 years. How do you get people to get out of their houses and from behind their screen to actually make the commitment to go to your church physically? That question is going to become increasingly difficult. So we can't think about Sunday morning the way we've always thought about it. We have to think about it, the live experience, whether it's Sunday morning or any other time of the week, as the shift. And if you want to stick with the Rick Warren thing, which is problematic, but I'll just do that. So instead of being first base, it's really more like the shift from second to third base or something, like getting people to come from behind their rooms, behind their screens in their houses to actually go to your campus. It becomes a deeper level of commitment for somebody.
Yeah.
So does that mean that Sunday morning experience is now more akin to early church catechism, where you're asking people for higher levels of commitment and involvement and what they're doing? And then what do you do with that experience, with that assumption that you're bringing to it? So you have deeper Bible studies instead of you put more emphasis on gathering and studying scripture together, things like that. So it really shifts how we even think about what we do. And then to get back to the online experience, then we've got to shift our thinking about production to from gathering to sent. So from to that, that's a phrase that my friend Matt Lake, who's a pastor in Pennsylvania, likes to talk about a lot. But it's the shift from creating content with the expectation that you're going to have an audience come to you to creating content that actually competes in the marketplace of ideas.
Yeah.
So can we create a video that you can actually put up on a YouTube channel that is decent enough that it might get viral traction next to the millions of other videos that are out there. And then how do you do that? Because, you know, a half hour talking head sermon recording is not going to be it, right?
Nope.
So how do you reframe production in a way that makes sense out of the marketplace? And that's what Paul did, right? The Areopagus.
Yep.
That's what Paul's ministry was about. And talk about a marketplace of ideas. That's what the Areopagus was. And Paul was there ministering and quoting pagan poets. So we've got to get real serious about that.
Well, and even that ties back into being able to recruit and coach volunteers to show your organization and your leadership the value of adding to the team. Because if the gathering that's going to continue happening is no longer the front door, it means we're making, creating, producing a new front door. Yeah, that is a big shift. Well, Len, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. If there are listeners who want to follow your work, who want to connect with Invite Resources, or they just want to reach out and say hi, what's the best way for them to do that?
LWilson@inviteresources.com. But if you're also on my blog and reading some posts there, you can connect with me at Len@lenwilson.us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Take care.
And now, listeners, we want to hear from you. Are any of the traits Len identified areas you're working on? Are there any traits you would add to the list? Email us at podcast@umcom.org. And you can, of course, use that email, podcast@umcom.org, to send us any feedback or topic suggestions you have for the show. We always love hearing from you. And the easiest way to support the show and help other church communicators like yourself find it is by sharing this episode with your friends and colleagues and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever service you're listening to right now. And did you know that United Methodist Communications is celebrating 80 years of ministry? Your support ensures that the latest denominational news, dynamic stories, and informative articles will continue to connect our global community. Make a tax-deductible donation today at resourceumc.org/giveumcom. That's resourceumc.org/giveumcom. Thanks again for listening to the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast.